WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Authorities say a man opened fire on an ICE facility in Dallas this morning. He killed one detainee and injured two others. Acting ICE Director Todd Lyons in a CBS News interview.
The shooter fired indiscriminately into vehicles. The detainees were in the vehicle at the time. They were not outside. There was no way he could have known detainees were in there.
He confirmed the suspect who killed himself was 29-year-old Joshua John. Authorities say there were anti-ICE etchings on a bullet he left behind. The first of what could be many lawsuits has been filed in the wake of a mid-air collision over Washington between an American Airlines flight and an Army helicopter. The airline and Army are named, as is the government. Attorney Brian Alexander.
The primary duty of an air traffic controller is to separate traffic and to avoid mid-air collisions. In this particular case, they completely failed to meet that responsibility.
CBS News Brief. I'm Cammie McCormick.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Shali Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay. Republican lawmakers are introducing bills they say would increase the housing supply in Wisconsin. Savannah Tome Olson has the details.
In polling, people often rank affordable housing as one of their top concerns. Tom Larson, president and CEO of the Wisconsin Realtors Association.
The average age of the first-time homebuyer is now 38 years old. And this is due to the fact that housing prices continue to rise faster than wages. The average price of a home now in Wisconsin is approximately $340,000. That far exceeds a price that most working families can afford. Wisconsin's affordability crisis is worse than most other states. Over the last 15 years, Wisconsin has built fewer housing units per capita than the national average. And if you take a look at our affordability, Wisconsin's affordability is worse than any of our surrounding neighbors.
One of the bills would create a program Republican lawmakers say would make it easier for people to buy their first home. Representative Dan Knodel of Germantown.
0% interest second mortgage loans, up to $60,000. Or 25% of a home's purchase price. To help first-time buyers, you can use these for down payments and closing costs.
These bills would also include creating statewide guidance for accessory dwelling units. That's where people add homes, sometimes tiny homes, in their backyards. Some municipalities allow this already, but this bill would codify some rules statewide. Republicans say many of these measures were included in Governor Tony Evers' original budget, so they expect bipartisan support. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
And for WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman. More news anytime at WFHR.com and WIRI.FM.
It's the Brewers and the Padres. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers and Padres wrapping up their series in San Diego. Last night, the crew shut out 7-0. Today, Chad Patrick gets the start. Quinn Priester's start moves to this weekend before their bye the first week of the playoffs. NFL. At age 27, Mecole Hardman was the oldest receiver in the Packers locker room.
I mean, it's a great room, man. Great competitive room. But yeah, like you said, you know, all of us trying to make plays, all of us trying to, you know, put our name out there. It's a young room as well.
Last night, Hardman got cut from the practice squad, replaced by a rookie out of UMass, Jacoby Keeney-James. The Packers getting ready to play the Cowboys in Dallas on Sunday Night Football after losing to the 0-2 Browns in Cleveland.
We're just trying to win one game at a time. If you're thinking or have your sights set on anything outside of that, I think you're focused on the wrong things. Like, we got to be focused in what the tape says and then moving on.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy sky tonight, patchy fog and lows in the upper 40s. Sunshine continues for tomorrow and beautiful. Highs in the mid-70s and more sun in mid-70s again Friday. The dry and mild weather is expected to continue through the weekend into early next week. It's 69 degrees right now.
Join Lou Rugani for the Music of the Stars every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. until noon. Lou brings back the nostalgia from the golden age of radio with the music, drama, and comedy shows that made radio magic. Music of the Stars is sponsored by Lakeland Care, providing personalized support that aims to improve quality of life and maintain independence for elders and those with disabilities. It's the Music of the Stars, Sunday at 7 on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Angels of Dirt director and record producer Wendy Schneider. Civic Media's David Grant tells us how you can take over a radio station for a day, and wrestling announcer Rich LoCascio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
They wish to break the entire thing. That is the objective. It isn't about efficiency. It's about breaking it. And it's about breaking it for what end?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Gerrymandering is bad for everybody.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I'm grossly discouraged, and I have given up on any justice in our system. It doesn't exist anymore.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Well, if you need your faith in our system restored, I've got just the guest for you this next half hour. It is an incredible privilege and honor to be joined by two former federal appeals court judges. I'm going to introduce them in just one moment. But if you've been listening to us, you know that we have just kicked off Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold multi-state text to win contest, where texting in the word of the hour will get you qualified to win one of two daily prizes and our grand prize. The daily prizes are $200 in cold hard cash or gold jewelry, and our grand prize, which will give away one lucky winner to one lucky winner, is two club level seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota. Yeah, it's going to be cold. That's why you like those indoor club level seats. That game is on November 23rd, 2025 at 12 p.m., plus a gas card to get you to the game. And the word to win this hour is gift, as in Civic Media wants you to win this contest and enjoy our gift, G-I-F-T. Good luck to everyone, and I'll be repeating that in just a few more minutes. With all of that business out of the way, did you know 1 week ago today was Constitution Day? My two guests certainly did. It is my humble privilege to bring on former District Court and Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Judge John Tinder. He was appointed to the District Court by Ronald Reagan in 87 and to the Appeals Court by President Bush, the original Bush, the first one, Herbert Walker, in 1992. He was joined. I'm sorry, Judge Wood, did you want to correct me? Was I getting something wrong?
I think it was the younger.
Was it the younger? 92. Time is but a slipstream now, judges, and thank you so much for correcting me. Not Herbert Walker, GW. Thank you, Judge Wood. And you just heard her voice there. That is Circuit Court, Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, former Judge Diane Wood. Welcome to you both. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
So you both, as well as nearly 38 other former federal court judges, have signed a letter trying to reinvigorate the public's awareness of the moment that we're in and the importance of an independent judiciary. You did this through your relationship with the Keep Our Republic organization, which was founded in 2020. It's a nonpartisan civic education organization committed to the vitality of America's democracy by promoting trust in elections, the rule of law, and constitutional checks and balances. It sounds real hoity-toity, but we are in a very literally tipping point moment, I think, especially when it comes to respect for the courts and the independence of the judiciary. Let me start with you, Judge Tinder. Why did you want to become part of the Article 3 coalition with Keep Our Republic? Why now? What do you think is at stake, sir?
Well, I know that my working colleagues that are still on the bench, their hands are tied, and the litigating forces have turned the spotlight on what judges are doing in all of these ways to which they can't respond. The internet, these comments that are being made after rulings are made, requests for impeachment, or and so on and so forth. And these judges are just trying to do their job. And I know they can't speak because, like Diane, I had my First Amendment rights put on hold for the entire time I served, but they're back now. And these judges need support. They need to have someone speak for them because they can't speak for themselves. Plus, I saw all of the others, like Diane and Danelle Taha and Tim Evans and all of these wonderful people that I have such great regard for joining this Article 3 coalition. And I thought, that's something I want to be a part of. So that's why I did.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. And again, this Article 3 coalition, part of the Keep Our Republic, has got at least, at my last count, 40 retired judges appointed by 6 different presidents across both parties, Carter, Reagan, H.W., Clinton, G.W., and President Obama. And Judge Wood, you were appointed by President Bill Clinton back in 1995. Why did you feel it was important to publish this open letter on Constitution Day? Where does this moment sit in your mind in terms of both respect for the courts, but also more broadly, the rule of law? And why do you think that's important to Jane and John Doakes here in Wisconsin? Why does this matter to regular people?
Well, it's a great question, but I think I would start by saying that this letter gave John and me an opportunity, and actually the other people in the Article 3 coalition, to take the veil away a little bit, to show people what the judges are really doing, why it matters to them. If you were to ask somebody if, you know, maybe they were contesting their taxes or they had a dispute over whether their insurance policy was going to cover their house or not if it blew away in a tornado, or any of 1,000 real things that happen to real people, you want confidence in the people who are resolving those disputes. You want them to listen to the facts of what happened. You want them to be well-versed in the law and to apply that law in a nonpartisan way. You know, you leave your partisan views at the door when you walk into the courthouse. And I think that message has not been coming through as effectively as I would like to see it in the general media. Instead, you know, there are people who think, you know, if Donald Trump appointed you, then there's a whole set of things that you're going to do. And if Bill Clinton appointed you, there's somewhat a different set of things. If you look at the actual record of the judges who are on the courts, that is just not the way it works. I won't say, you know, we're all human, right? And we come with whatever our predispositions are, but then there's a process. You know, you listen to people, you read briefs, you listen to arguments, you talk to your colleagues, and you find some middle ground. And I think that the public would actually be thrilled to know that the courts work as well as they do. I'm not going to say there's never a glitch because we're a human institution, but they actually work quite well.
Folks, that's the voice of former Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal Judge Diane Wood. She's joined by Judge John Tinder. He both worked on the district courts and the Court of Appeals. They're talking to me today in honor of Constitution Day, and they both were signatories, along with 38 other retired federal court judges, signatories on a letter basically calling to us all. The first line of the letter reads this: since 1787, our Constitution has stood firm. Now so must we all. It is, Judge Tinder, a call to Americans. It's a call to Wisconsinites. It's a call to citizens to stand up for this vague concept of the rule of law. Judge Wood pointed out that when you look at the complete record from district courts to the courts of appeals, to the Supreme Court, what is true. What is true in volume and on average over time, I would say, is that judges are not trying to do a partisan job. They don't have predetermined outcomes. They're trying to understand the law correctly, follow precedent, and apply the law to the facts of the case at hand. I agree with that. Here's my question to you, Judge Tinder. Our national dialogue is focused on these big cases of renown before the Supreme Court. And legal scholars of all stripes have commented that the Supreme Court itself seems to have taken on a much more partisan slant. At least that is the public's perception of it. I believe that's leading to some of this erosion of trust that we see in the judiciary and by extension the rule of law. But just as I frequently try to remind folks that when you look at local and state government, it is far less partisan than what you see in the national dialogue, so too in the courts. How do you think we can have a better discussion about the role of courts, the importance of judicial independence, and focus less, or how, is that even possible, on how the Supreme Court in these handful of cases seem to dominate Americans and Wisconsinites' understanding of the court system? There's so much more action going on in the district and the appeals courts.
Well, there certainly is. And so much of it is how it's reported. So many of the cases that you're referring to that get all of the attention are on very preliminary rulings, preliminary injunctions, very early in proceedings. They're not with full records. They're not done after the long process that litigation usually is. Day after day after day, courts all over the country are carefully deciding cases. They're listening to evidence. They're hearing the facts. They're waiting till everything plays out to make a decision. Jurors are given the facts, and they make these very difficult decisions that people have to make in cases. And they don't. It's not instantaneous. It doesn't just flash suddenly. You're at the end. I think the public's getting the impression that these things happen overnight because there's so much focus on very small portions of cases that get flashed into the highlight. In 28 years of service in the judiciary, 20 years on the district court, 8 years in the Court of Appeals, never once did I walk into a case thinking, well, how did the president and his supporters who appointed me want me to decide this case? That's not a factor for any judge. They walk into the case thinking, what's the evidence going to be? How should the law be read for this particular case? And day after day after day, the judges throughout the country, that's how they're deciding cases. They're not going in with a predisposition or a mission assigned by their appointing president. And we need to get people understanding that. I think the way cases are being covered starts with a presumption. Oh, this is a Biden judge. This is a Bush judge, or Bush one or Bush two judge. So he or she will decide that. That's not it at all. So somehow we need to get the message out and get it covered that judges are making independent decisions and they are basing it on the case and the facts in front of them.
And I'll add my unsolicited two cents to your far more valuable insight, Judge Tinder. And that is absolutely what every American should expect of every single judge, especially those that serve as Article III lifetime appointees. That is actually the mandate for an Article III judge. We see, I think, some focus on the shadow docket because it can seem to instantaneously change substantially folks' rights and how we understand how our government is organized. Folks, if you're just joining us, I've got two incredibly wise and incredibly smart guests with me this afternoon. Two former federal Article III judges. Judge John Tinder, appointed twice to the federal bench, once to the district court and then to the Court of Appeals, first by Ronald Reagan and then by George W. Bush in 1992, and former Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Diane Wood. They're my special guests. We're celebrating a belated Constitution Day. They were co-signatories alongside at least 38 other former Article III federal court judges in calling on all of us as good citizens to understand the importance of an independent judiciary and to turn the dial back. When we come back, I'm going to ask these fabulous guests about the threats, literal threats against the judiciary, and how we can all together start to push back on this extraordinary rhetorical and literal physical attacks on the judiciary. Stay tuned, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
Hi, my name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm also the author of a new book, Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power Are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. This summer proved to all of us that climate change is real and it is deadly. And I'm here to tell you that a small group of billionaires are making it worse. Did you know that billionaire Jeff Bezos's wife, Lauren Sanchez, emitted more carbon in her 11-minute Blue Origin space flight than the average person emits in a lifetime? Did you know that the average super yacht produces as much carbon emissions as 1,500 regular vehicles, and that private jets emit 10 to 20 times more pollutants per passenger than commercial airplanes? So who should pay for climate change? People like you who recycle and turn off the lights when you leave the room, or billionaires who take joyrides in space? Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Have you read or listened to any good mysteries lately? Would you like to know more about the people who write them? Listen to Masters of Mystery on WFHR Sunday, September 28th at 9 p.m. as host Rob Young converses with John Gaspard, writer of magic-filled mysteries, and professional actor turned audiobook narrator Jim Cunningham, as they discuss Gaspard's novels and their journey from written word to audiobook.
Let's remind each other life matters. If you're feeling overwhelmed, help is just a call away at 988. It's National Suicide Prevention Month, and you are not alone. This message from the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. 1 week ago, it was Constitution Day, where we are supposed to lift up, elevate, and remind ourselves that we are indeed a constitutional republic, a constitution that defines our rights, as well as limits the powers of the various branches of government. We have two retired judges from our third branch of government, the Article III branch of government, the federal judiciary. They are former District and Court of Appeals Judge John Tinder and former Court of Appeals Judge Diane Wood. Thank you both again for being here with me. Right before the break, Diane Wood, we started to address, and I queued up for our discussion, the fact that Judge Esther Salas' son was murdered by someone who was targeting federal Judge Salas. The FBI and other reporting agencies from the federal government have been reporting just an explosion of direct threats to judges. This is also, though harder to find precise data, happening at the state court level as well. Are you hearing from colleagues that they're concerned, that are currently on the bench, that they're concerned for their safety? And what do you want Americans from any side of the political spectrum who are extremely frustrated with the courts? What do you want them to know? How do we move past this? How do we dial it back?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. The tragedy that Judge Salas suffered, losing her only child, her only he's her only son, but her only child, indeed, was similar to the tragedy that one of our colleagues suffered years earlier, Joan Lefkoe, who lost both her mother and her husband to a disgruntled litigant. And our society is plagued with violence, whether it's Charlie Kirk or whether it's the man who was trying to kill then-candidate Trump. It's just unacceptable. We have to have better ways of resolving our differences. I will say I don't know a single judge who is influenced by this violence in the way that judge does the job. People take this job to be public servants. You certainly don't get rich doing it. You have a lot of work, but it's very important work. It keeps our society rolling along. Somebody has to resolve these cases, whether they're civil or criminal or whatever they may be, constitutional. And we try to do that. Now, what I do hear, I mean, the judges do take care to work with the federal marshals, who, in my experience, were absolutely wonderful to work with. They were under the technical supervision of the Department of Justice, but a more dedicated professional group you could not have asked for. And people do worry about their family members. There are these threats of people delivering pizzas, you know, to say, I know where you live. And it takes a lot to feel that maybe your family member is in some danger. And I remember even talking to my own children saying, don't open packages that are on the front doorstep. You've got to be careful. And they were. So what I'm hoping is that we can somehow, in this terrible atmosphere of widespread violence, realize that sitting down and talking to each other is a much better way to resolve these problems. That's what we did on the Court of Appeals. People were appointed, as is true with the Article III coalition, by every president you could think of. And three of us would sit down in the room, talk our way through the case. Disagreement was rare. I actually did a study of it at one point. I wrote an article and figured out that in only 3% of the cases did somebody even bother to write a separate opinion at the Court of Appeals level. And that's because the law was what was telling us what to do. And I should add for your audience that the Seventh Circuit, where we were both judges, covers Wisconsin and Illinois and Indiana. So we know your state very well.
Thank you so much for reminding me to tell folks that, having worked for Judge Kaney on the Seventh Circuit, I sometimes forget. Folks don't know that's the circuit that covers Wisconsin, and as you point out so rightly, Illinois and Indiana. Judge Tinder, I've shared this story before on the air. Judge Kaney, when I was interviewed, never asked me who I voted for, didn't ask me anything about my politics. He asked me about my legal research. He asked to look at some of my writing. We had a deep conversation about one of the more complicated opinions that he had authored that I had read in detail. I spoke with his clerks at length. We had similarly very bookish, very intellectual, very deep conversations about the law. I never once ever heard him say, well, this is where we're going on this case. He simply wanted to know what I thought about it. He wanted to know what my thinking was. There was never even the slightest partisan tinge. There's one thing that you want listeners to know about the vast, vast, vast majority of federal judges across the country in every single circuit about how they approach cases. What is it, sir? Because I think this is the message that we need people to understand.
Well, sitting on the collegial court with people like Diane Wood and our colleagues, it was such a remarkable experience to me, because I suspect Diane and I probably have never voted the same way in an election, maybe in our lives.
Probably.
But there was so much we agreed on. The areas where we differed, I came on, Diane had been on, 20 plus years by the time I came on. I felt like I was walking into some conversations that had been going on for 25, 30 years among my colleagues. But immediately I would know we agree on most all of this. And the areas we didn't agree, we discussed. And it was such a wonderful experience. And I wish the public could see the inside of it. And the end product of it, the written opinions, are what we think and what we believe. No one comes into it thinking we're going to come out that way. As we go through the process, we reach a result.
Folks, we're going to have to leave it there. Judges, it would be my highest honor if you would share some more of your time with us again soon, because I want people to understand how this works. I'm going to describe that a little bit on the other side, my experience as a federal appeals court clerk, and I'm going to read the letter that Judges Tinder and Diane Wood signed to support our Constitution and the independence of our federal judiciary. Stay with us. It's the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Sholly Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay. Some Wisconsin residents receiving health care through the marketplace could see their premiums increase. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin visited Weston earlier this week and says she has a plan. Civic Media's Isabella Nieto reports.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin met with Marathon County residents earlier this week, leading a roundtable on the potential loss of health insurance tax credits.
Recently, we have seen legislation pass in Congress that has made our health care more expensive in this country and certainly in the state of Wisconsin. But one of the things we could prevent or fend off is the expiration of these tax credits.
Premium tax credits help low and middle income families pay for their health insurance. In 2021, those tax credits went to residents purchasing insurance through healthcare.gov. The tax credit program is now closing in on its expiration date at the end of this year. Baldwin met with constituents who could see changes in their coverage prices if premium tax credits expire.
I am leading the fight in Congress to extend these tax credits, make them permanent so that people will be able to afford their insurance through this program.
Baldwin is co-sponsoring the Healthcare Affordability Act, which would extend the premium tax credit program.
You know, we have a precious little time to act, but I'm hopeful because I do have some colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle who are taking a strong look at this, and we have just weeks to go before this will come to a head.
Baldwin says the hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites receiving health insurance through the Affordable Care Act could see their premiums increase as much as 34.5%. For Civic Media News, I'm Isabella Nieto.
And for WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Sholly Pittman.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Making movies seems like a pretty good gig. Believe it or not, there are people who whine and moan about it, according to wrestler-turned-actor David Bautista. He told GQ he is getting older and more choosy about projects and says, quote, "I want to work with people I just love and respect because I love this business. I love filmmaking and the art, and if people don't want to be there, I don't want to be there with them." This was obviously before reviews for his new film, Afterburn, came out. If you're looking for something to rent that you might have forgotten about or never got around to seeing, check out a film that's climbing the HBO charts. 2011's The Sitter is more or less a remake of the Elizabeth Shue 80s comedy Adventures in Babysitting, albeit a more foul-mouthed and raunchy one. Jonah Hill and Sam Rockwell star in the film that critics say might be worth a revisit. If you're wondering why it was forgotten about, it could be because it received a 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it does have Sam Rockwell. It's worth checking out, as sometimes history is kind to comedies. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy sky tonight, patchy fog, and lows in the upper 40s. Sunshine continues for tomorrow and beautiful. Highs in the mid-70s, and more sun in mid-70s again Friday. The dry and mild weather is expected to continue through the weekend into early next week. It's 69 degrees right now.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. not the seriously know-it-all sports dad or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Jimmy Kimmel is back on Late Night. Keegan Kelly is in from crack.com to tell us what it means moving forward, and we'll recombobulate with Dan Schaefer. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to Judges Tinder and Wood for spending a half an hour of their Wednesday afternoon with me. Thank you to you for being with us this afternoon here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to put the link to the letter that the judges authored in honor of this year's Constitution Day, calling on all of us as Americans to recognize the criticalness to our democracy of the independent judiciary, of an Article III court system that's free from political influence and meddling. And boy, I hope they do come back, because I would love to ask them what they think about Congress perhaps adopting a binding code of ethics for the Supreme Court. I don't know. I think that would probably be a really good idea. I promised you I would read their letter, which I will do in just a moment. But it is Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Multi-State Text to Win contest in the 5 o'clock hour. You've got to text in the word to win this hour via the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you get your apps from. Just search for Civic Media. Each time you text in the word of the hour, which we do many, many times a day, you will be entered to win a daily prize of either $200 or gold jewelry, and you'll be entered to win our grand prize, 2 club-level indoor heated seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota on November 23rd, plus a gas card to get you to the game in Green Bay, a $1,500 value. The word to win this hour that you want to text in to get entered to maybe win one of those amazing prizes is GIFT, G-I-F-T. That is GIFT, G-I-F-T. Also wanted to share this bit of programming notes. We have an incredibly special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show tomorrow. We are going to be broadcasting live from the historic Reisinger Family Hilltop Farm in Spring Green from Wisconsin for the whole show. And for more than 100 years, the Reisinger family has been part of Wisconsin's proud dairy farming tradition. And we're going to be talking with the family about their past, sharing some stories. We're going to talk about their present, and we're going to talk about what the future of farming looks like in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about some of the challenges facing farmers, and especially family farms, today. We'll be joined also by the Farmer Angel Network to shed light on the mental health crisis facing farmers and agricultural communities. We'll also be joined by the Wisconsin Farmers Union. It's going to be an amazing show. Do not miss it. That is tomorrow, a special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show at the Reisinger Family Farm in Spring Green. Do not miss it. Okay, I want to share with you the judge's letter, because it's short, it's to the point, and it is oh so important. So here it is. This was a letter, again, published by the Article 3 Coalition of Keep Our Republic. You can find the letter at keepourrepublic.org. We're going to post the link to it in our show notes. You can find those after the show is over, wherever you get your podcast from, or at civicmedia.us. Here's the letter. Since 1787, our Constitution has stood firm. So now must we all. On this day in 1787, our founders put aside their differences and signed the Constitution. As former federal judges, we each took an oath to support and defend the Constitutions. We come from different corners of America and have been appointed by presidents of both parties, but our commitment to the oath and Constitution knows neither party nor retirement date. We are compelled to speak out as sitting judges cannot. because the Constitution is under attack. Sitting judges bound by a code of ethics can only speak sparingly through their opinions. We, as retired judges, are no longer so constrained. The founders of our nation blazed a new trail in establishing our constitutional republic of three separate and co-equal branches of government. Our founders recognized that an independent judiciary, free from political pressure, was essential to protecting Americans' newly won liberty. As Alexander Hamilton wrote, there is no liberty if the power of judging be not separated from the legislative and executive powers. Put plainly, a judicial branch cowed by the political branches cannot safeguard the rights of all citizens. Misinformation, disinformation, and fiery rhetoric distort public understanding of the judiciary's critical role in maintaining our democracy. Threats against judges and their families are obvious attempts to intimidate, harass, and pressure judges to sway their opinions, shaking the public's trust and confidence in the courts. This Constitution Day, we pledge to strengthen America's democracy by mobilizing a better informed citizenry. We are speaking out to protect the Constitution and all that it stands for. Its principles should be celebrated as the foundation of our nation. And we call upon every American to join us in upholding judicial independence for our own and future generations as our founders envisioned and the Constitution guarantees. They're going on a national civic educational campaign in Savannah and Harrisburg and Denver and all over. Again, we'll put the link to the letter and keep our republic in our show notes. From that bit of inspiration to what I can only call embarrassing desperation of our president, Donald Trump literally melted down yesterday in front of the United Nations. The teleprompter didn't work, so, oh my goodness, the man spoke off the cuff for an hour, and it was frightening. We're going to play some of the sound, but I just want to give you this bit. A senior foreign diplomat texted the Washington Post global affairs columnist Ishan Tharoor right after Trump finished speaking, and this was the text. This man is stark raving mad. Do Americans not see how embarrassing this is? And I have to say, like, a lot of the coverage of this was weak. You know, things like it was meandering, scathing, emotional. But, you know, I think there's a whole nother set of words that could be used to describe what that was. Incoherent. Deluded. Not reflecting any firm grasp of reality. It was riddled with lies and exaggerations. He was, I need the Nobel Peace Prize, claiming credit for resolving wars that haven't been resolved. He bragged about poll numbers. He even tilted at windmills, his favorite topic when he goes meandering about and can't quite keep a thought in his head for more than 30 seconds. He took a shot at the mayor of London. He made stuff up. I mean, it was astonishing in the worst possible way. And Axios ran a headline that I thought captured the moment. This was the headline, Trump's middle finger to the UN. Your countries are going to hell. I literally gasped when I heard the sound that we're about to play for you. I gasped. I could not believe that American president stood in the General Assembly Hall of the United Nations and basically went on a lunatic rant. Jacob, I want to start with cut 12 because this is the one that made me gasp.
I'm really good at this stuff. Your countries are going to hell. In America, we've taken bold action to swiftly shut down uncontrolled migration.
You tell a room full of prime ministers and presidents that your countries are going to hell? Well, let's listen to him talk about how he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize after telling everybody that their countries are going to hell, because that, you know, that very Nobel Peace Prize-y, you know what I'm saying? Take a listen.
Now, after ending all of these wars and also earlier negotiating the Abraham Accords, which is a very big thing for which our country received no credit, never receives credit, everyone says that I should get the Nobel Peace Prize for each one of these achievements. But for me, the real prize will be the sons and daughters who live to grow up with their mothers and fathers, because millions of people are no longer being killed in endless and unglorious wars.
I don't want any more war. But asking for the Nobel Peace, it's not presidential. It's petty. It's small. I just have to read to you one of I have no explanation for this at all whatsoever. Here's what the president said about the border as well. Quote, "We have a border strong and we have a shape, and that shape doesn't just go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere." What in the actual frickety what? I got to read it again. "We have a border strong and we have a shape, and that shape just doesn't go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere." Huh? CJ, what does it mean when a shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere? Do you have any idea what the president was talking about there?
Well, the claim that he didn't state facts, that Biden's
he stated some facts and he just lied his butt off about other things, CJ. I'm asking you a direct question. What does this mean, CJ? We have a border strong and we have a shape, and that shape just doesn't go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere. CJ, you criticize Biden for being off his rocker. Make that make sense to me.
The border is now zero coming across.
I'm asking you to make sense of that statement.
You want to deflect from
No, I'm asking you a direct question. Okay, we're not going to have to. Okay, never mind. My point is that our president lied about a bunch of things before the United Nations, claimed that he's owed the Nobel Peace Prize, and said things that made no sense. This isn't my impression. Again, a senior foreign diplomat texted this about Donald Trump. "This man is stark raving mad. Do Americans not see how embarrassing this is?" I don't know about you, but I do. Listen, we've got to move on. It was a unmitigated disaster. And I don't care if you want to try to spin it into whatever pro-Trumpy kind of drivel you want. Trust me when I say this, that moment will be ridiculed and held up as an example of a very dark moment in American history. The reality is that America right now is more isolated, more at risk, both economically and from a national security perspective, than it has been in a long time because of what Donald Trump has done. The world does not respect us. It's basically considered us an irrelevancy, and it's moving on without us. And no temper tantrum by the orange man in chief in the United Nations General Assembly, no assertions to the contrary, will change that fact. And we have nobody but Donald Trump to thank for it. When we come back, we're going to talk about Kimmel. Did you listen last night? What did you think? Kind of an interesting contrast between the, again, foreign diplomat, stark raving mad president, and Jimmy Kimmel calling us to our higher angels and giving us a chuckle. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drug to driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We're taking a little bit of a detour this week on the Recombobulation Minute so I can tell you about a brand new project we've been working on here at Civic Media that we're really, really excited about. So here at the Civic Media Network, we produce a tremendous amount of content on any given day. From our news team all over the state to our daily lineup of political talk and commentary shows to our many podcasts and weekend shows to local morning shows to all kinds of digital content, there can be a lot to keep up with. But now we're bringing you a new way to find all of this tremendous content all in one place. It's a new email newsletter called Civic Media Today. Like the Recombobulation Area, it also publishes on Substack. This is going to be your one-stop shop to connect with everything across the Civic Media extended universe, from podcasts and live streams of your favorite shows to the latest on everything happening across Wisconsin. So go subscribe to Civic Media Today.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Are unauthorized immigrants eligible for federal Medicaid coverage? No. Unauthorized immigrants are not eligible for traditional federally funded Medicaid health insurance and never have been. A 1996 law also requires most authorized immigrants to wait 5 years for eligibility. 14 states, not including Wisconsin, use state funds to cover unauthorized immigrants. President Trump has proposed cutting federal Medicaid funds to those states, which could drop 1.4 million people from health care coverage. In Wisconsin, Medicaid covers 1.28 million people at a cost of $12.1 billion. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Learn more at wisconsinwatch.org.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Dawn, you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. While our president was basically the laughingstock of the world during his, this is a senior foreign diplomat to the Washington Post, a stark raving mad stream of consciousness before the United Nations yesterday, a comedian sounded presidential, and not just any comedian, the comedian that Donald Trump and his FCC chairman have tried to censor and silence, Jimmy Kimmel. Did you watch it last night? Because, wow. If Donald Trump was trying to tank Jimmy Kimmel's ratings, this was not the way to go about it. Millions and millions of Americans watch Kimmel. I usually don't watch late nights talk shows. I just don't. It's not my thing. I need to be going to bed. I need less politics at that time of the day, not more. But I watched it. Apparently 6.3 million viewers on broadcast television. That's triple what he normally gets. And that is even though Sinclair and Nexstar refused to play out the show. So that basically cut off about a quarter of the U.S. TV market. So, yeah. And on YouTube and other outlets, it's like 25, 26 million views of it. Of course, we will post the YouTube and some links to Jimmy Kimmel's monologue so that you all can check it out in our show notes for today and keep that number rising. I'm just going to, like, maybe every day just recycle it Free speech is good. America is good. We can say what we actually think. We can be wrong. It's okay. But let's take just a couple of cuts of what the comedian that sounded like a president had to say yesterday. Let's listen to Jimmy Kimmel on free speech.
Look, I never imagined I would be in a situation like this. I barely paid attention in school. But one thing I did learn from Lenny Bruce and George Carlin and Howard Stern is that a government threat to silence a comedian the president doesn't like is anti-American. That's anti-American.
Indeed it is. And good on ya, Jimmy Kimmel. And here is Jimmy Kimmel, I think, trying to, you know, take some accountability and hopefully call us to our better angels.
Take Nor this. Was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make. But I understand that to some that felt either ill-timed or unclear, or maybe both. And for those who think I did point a finger, I get why you're upset. If the situation was reversed, there's a good chance I'd have felt the same way.
What kind of, you know, up is down, right is left moment are we in? When a late night talk show host sounds more presidential, more reasonable, more grounded, more rational than our president did on the very same day when addressing the United Nations. These are dark times, they're trying times. And I think it's very hard to find energy some days. Today's been a hard day for me. I'm sure each and every one of you have hard days from time to time. But we gather here together on our show and on this network to hopefully have a couple of laughs, talk about the news, talk about politics, and share our perspectives. This show, this network, this opportunity to be with all of you, it does keep me going. And so I thank you very deeply for this opportunity to be with you every day and to try to sort through this time together. I've gotten both criticism and praise for some of my comments over the time that I've been on the air, and I just want to say this to each and every one of you, especially in light of yet another shooting and tragedy this morning. This isn't a time for both sides, both siderisms. It is a moment where we have to be clear-eyed and sober and accurate and tell the damn truth about what we're seeing. And it is also a time for everyone to say again and again and again, no matter how bad it gets under this Trump administration, that the solution is only found through the ballot box. It is only found through our court system. Though our confidence in our courts may be weakened, I do believe, I hope I give you hope every day that this moment will pass. We will come out the other side. We will be able to reestablish some common ground, but it will take a collective commitment to do so. It takes a commitment from each and every one of us and those that we disagree with to actually value facts and to require of our elected officials that they call us to our best angels, that they are role models, that they exhibit courage and integrity and selflessness. Now, no matter what your politics may be in this moment, those are ideas that I think we can all get behind. And if we're being candid about it, what we saw from our president yesterday before the United Nations was not selflessness, it was not courage, and it certainly lacked in integrity. What we saw from Jimmy Kimmel was that. and he's just a stand-up comic. We all can live in courage and integrity and selflessness and try to model this for our elected political leaders. It starts with us. That's going to do it for me today. Thanks for being with me. We got that special farm show tomorrow. Don't miss it. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. A man opened fire on an ICE facility in Dallas today, killing one detainee and two others in a van. Acting ICE Director Todd Lyons confirmed to CBS News the suspect is 29-year-old Joshua John, who killed himself.
It is an individual from Oklahoma. The FBI is actually working right now, working on social media ties, working on unknown associates, getting search warrants for his residence to see what they can find on that and what the motive was in the shooting.
A federal judge ruled today it's unconstitutional for the Trump administration to require states to cooperate on immigration enforcement to get disaster relief funding. The first lawsuit's been filed over the mid-air collision in January over Washington between an American Airlines regional jet and an Army helicopter. Attorney Bob Clifford.
The families will seek the answers to the very questions that they have. They will be seeking the accountability that they are owed.
CBS News Brief. I'm Cammie McCormick.